Well, good evening and welcome. It is very good to see everybody here. I appreciate your presence. As always, I encourage you to take out a Bible. Make certain that what is said in these lessons is not just man's thoughts, but it is indeed the Word of God. I am, again, so appreciative of this opportunity. As I said before, it's like coming home. I know so many of you so well. I have gotten in the habit of just telling people, and you're not immune to this, I still am really one of those blessed people who's bad with faces and names, so I still don't remember everybody. I keep hoping that as I get older, my memory will improve, and it's not working. But there are so many ways that I could tell you how indebted I am to this congregation. One of them happened just last week in the adult Bible class down in Northside in Colorado Springs. We're studying the book of Revelation, and the teacher asked this group of people that had been Christians, many of them all of their life, or they grew up within the church, asked, how many of you studied Revelation as a kid? Two of us raised our hands. And I am thankful to this congregation for making sure that my education as I was growing up was so thorough, and I hope that you will continue to do that. I'm indebted in so many ways. Well, I want to talk about the judgment of God. And of course, Matthew asked me what I was going to preach about this evening. He wanted to know what songs to go along with that. I said, well, judgment of God, and he picked Think About Heaven. Positive thing as we get into this sermon. It's not actually a terribly discouraging sermon. But if you go back to the Old Testament and you think about the epitome of God's judgment, you think of basically two things. You think about the flood because that is worldwide, but that's not the one I want to talk about. The one I want to talk about this evening is Sodom and Gomorrah, because that is a judgment of fire, and it has been set as an example for all time. You see, it didn't happen to God's people. It didn't happen to the Jews. It didn't happen to Christians. It happened before the old law was given. It was a judgment that was meant as a standard, as a lesson for all of mankind for all time. And I want us to learn a few lessons from it. So if you have your Bibles, turn over to Genesis chapter 19. In just a second, we're going to read 28 verses. For those who are not familiar with it, we're going to read basically the events that lead up to and include the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. So basically, there's this city in the Canaan area, Sodom and Gomorrah. It's a whole region. And it has been incredibly wicked, and God has heard about it. And he comes to Abraham, and he says, I'm going to destroy it. And Abraham reasons with him in chapter 18 and says, you wouldn't destroy it if it has righteous people in it, would you? And he reasons with God, and he bargains with God until it comes all the way down to, if I can find 10 people, and I can't, there we go, 10 people. I can't do that while holding something. 10 people. If I can just find 10 people there that are righteous, I'm not going to destroy it. And so he sends two angels down there to see if there are 10 righteous people in the city of Sodom and Gomorrah. And so we pick up in chapter 19 and verse 1. Now the two angels came to Sodom in the evening as Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. And he said, Now behold, my lords, please turn aside into your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Then you may rise early and go on your way. They said, however, no, but we shall spend the night in the square. Yet he urged them strongly, so they turned aside to him and entered his house. And he prepared a feast for them and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. Before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, surrounded the house, both young and old, all the people from every quarter. And they called to Lot and said to him, Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may have relations with them. But Lot went out to them at the doorway and shut the door behind him and said, Please, my brothers, do not act wickedly. Now behold, I have two daughters who have not had relations with man. Please let me bring them out to you and do to them whatever you like. Only do nothing to these men, and as much as they have come under the shelter of my roof. But they said, Stand aside. Furthermore, they said, This one came in as an alien, and already he is acting like a judge. Now we will treat you worse than them. So they pressed hard against Lot and came near to break the door. But the men reached out their hands and brought Lot into the house with them and shut the door. They struck the men who were at the doorway of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves trying to find the doorway. Then the two men said to Lot, "Whom else have you here? A son-in-law and your sons and your daughters and whomever you have in the city, bring them out of the place. For we are about to destroy this place because their outcry has become so great before the Lord that the Lord has sent us to destroy it." Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law who were to marry his daughters and said, "Up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city." But he appeared to his sons-in-law to be jesting. When morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, saying, "Up, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, or you will be swept away in the punishment of the city." But he hesitated. So the men seized his hand and the hand of his wife and the hands of his two daughters, for the compassion of the Lord was upon him. And they brought him out and put him outside the city. When they had brought him outside, one said, "Escape for your life. Do not look behind you and do not stay anywhere in the valley. Escape to the mountains or you will be swept away." But Lot said to them, "Oh no, my lords. Now behold, your servant has found favor in your sight and you have magnified your loving kindness, which you have shown me by saving my life. But I cannot escape to the mountains, for the disaster will overtake me and I will die. Now behold, this town is near enough to flee to, and it is small. Please let me escape there. Is it not small, that my life may be saved?" He said to him, "Behold, I grant you this request also, not to overthrow the town of which you have spoken. Hurry, escape there, for I cannot do anything until you arrive there." Therefore the name of that town was called Zoar. The sun had risen over the earth when Lot came to Zoar. Then the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and all the valley and all the inhabitants of the cities and what grew on the ground. But his wife from behind looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. Now Abraham arose early in the morning and went to the place where he had stood before the Lord, and he looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the valley, and he saw, and behold, the smoke of the land descended like the smoke of a furnace. In the New Testament, we have a description of this also in 2 Peter chapter 2, starting in verse 6, and really this passage begins earlier, the argument that is made, but what's relevant to us begins in verse 6. He says, "And if he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to destruction by reducing them to ashes, having made them an example to those who would live ungodly lives thereafter. And if he rescued righteous Lot, oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men, for by what he saw and heard, that righteous man, while living among them, felt his righteous soul tormented day after day by their lawless deeds. Then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation and to keep the unrighteous under punishment for the day of judgment, and especially those who indulge the flesh in its corrupt desires and despise authority." And so as we consider this, this incredible scene in which you have this whole valley being wiped out into one enormous furnace of fire and smoke, we're told in the New Testament that was a declaration for all men throughout time. This is the punishment for wickedness. And so I want to talk about living in Sodom. You know, there are a lot of comparisons that are made, and some of them are unfair. I don't know if you've noticed. I don't like talking a lot about politics. I'll bring up a few things this evening, but I don't know if you remember, but when President Bush became president, Bush the W, everybody referred to him as Hitler and his followers as Nazis. And then, when President Obama became president, people referred to him as Hitler and his followers as Nazis. And then President Trump became president, and people referred to him as Hitler and his followers as Nazis. Frankly, that's been overdone. It's like everybody's Hitler and everybody's Nazis today, right? We just throw that one around. Is it fair to compare our society to Sodom? I want you to consider that this is, in fact, what God does.
He sets Sodom up. Sodom and Gomorrah. He sets them up. He shows them as an example. He punishes them. And then throughout time, when people get bad, he says, you know who you remind me of? You remind me of Sodom. And that was a constant warning to the people. So if you look in Isaiah, this is hundreds of years after Sodom and Gomorrah have been destroyed. And God is bringing punishment on the northern kingdom of Israel. He sends a prophet to the southern kingdom because they're not much better than the northern kingdom. And one of the things he says to them in Isaiah 1 and verse 10, hear the word of the Lord, you rulers of Sodom, give ear to the instruction of our God, you people of Gomorrah. Now, that's the very beginning of the message of Isaiah, and you can kind of get a hint. It's not good news. When God writes to you and he says, you guys are the rulers of Sodom and Gomorrah, he is saying, you are incredibly wicked. Watch out for the punishment of God that is coming. A few hundred years later, Jerusalem manages to survive that punishment of God. And then you have Jeremiah. And in Jeremiah chapter 23 and verse 14, again a prophet comes. And again, it's not good news because again, the comparison is made. He says, also among the prophets of Jerusalem, I have seen a horrible thing. The committing of adultery and walking in falsehood, and they strengthen the hands of evildoers so that no one is turned back from his wickedness. All of them have become to me like Sodom and her inhabitants like Gomorrah. And so again, he looks at Jerusalem, and in this case, he's even looking at the prophets. He's looking at God's people, and he said, you remind me of Sodom and Gomorrah. It gets even worse when Jeremiah writes the book of Lamentations. In Lamentations chapter 4 and verse 6, where he says, for the iniquity of the daughter of my people is greater than the sin of Sodom, which was overthrown as in a moment. At about the same time, Ezekiel is writing, and now he's far away from Jerusalem, but he gets the same basic message about God's people. And this is a very popular message today, one of the passages that people who don't believe the Bible really like to know. Ezekiel chapter 16, starting in verse 46, he says, now your older sister Samaria, now again, he's talking to Jerusalem, right? He's talking to the southern kingdom. The northern kingdom, Samaria. South of the southern kingdom, that's where Sodom and Gomorrah had been. He says, now your older sister Samaria, who lives north of you with her daughters, and your younger sister who lives south of you is Sodom with her daughters. Yet you have not merely walked in their ways or done according to their abominations, but as if that were too little, you acted more corruptly in all your conduct than they. As I live, declares the Lord God, Sodom, your sister and her daughters, have not done as you and your daughters have done. Behold, this was the guilt of your sister Sodom. She and her daughters had arrogance, abundant food, and careless ease, but she did not help the poor and needy. Thus they were haughty and committed abominations before me. Therefore I removed them when I saw it. And so for our purposes, what we see is once again the comparison being made. You guys are like Sodom and Gomorrah. You guys are worse than Sodom and Gomorrah. Why this passage became popular is people said, the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah was not homosexuality. It was inhospitality. And the answer is, it was both. This passage is absolutely correct. It is absolutely true. It was inhospitality. Other passages talk about their sexual immorality. Which one was it? It was both. By the way, if you went one more verse further, in verse 51, he talks then about the city of Samaria, and then he combines the two, and he says, you guys have lived in such a way that you made them look righteous. That is a terrifying statement. And we get to the New Testament, and God's not done making the comparisons. God talks about Sodom when he talks about Capernaum. Jesus comes into Capernaum and he's performing miracles and he says, if I had done these miracles in Sodom, they wouldn't have been destroyed. But what's he doing? He's comparing them to Sodom and he's saying, you're worse. And if you consider Jude, which was read for us this evening, Jude chapter 1, verses 4 through 8, it's actually a parallel of what you saw in 2 Peter 2. It is saying that your guys' behavior and outcome is parallel to that of Sodom. And he's talking then about false teachers that were entering within the church. So it is not unreasonable to go back and look at Sodom and say, we may be living in another one. And are we?
Well, I look at it and I say, we certainly have that homosexuality bit. We've got the parades, we've got the pride, we've got the marriage. That's been pressed and pushed upon us. We have in our society a growing godless attitude, staggering numbers of abortion. Unrighteousness in our society is tremendous. Well, let me put it another way. When's the last time people thought of America as the seat of righteousness? You ever describe that to people? Hey, you want to know a righteous land? You should think about America. That's not us. So what's the lessons about Sodom and Gomorrah if there's the possibility that we are living in a land that God, if he were to send a prophet, might say, you know who you remind me of? You remind me of Sodom. What should we learn from that? I don't want to terrify you. Every good preacher knows that the maximum number of points you're supposed to have is 3. I have 9. I don't mean to terrify you with that, but we're going to go through them fairly quickly. The first point that we learn from lessons regarding Sodom and Gomorrah is that don't expect the doom, the judgment of God, to come with this feeling, this ominous feeling. You know, when you watch movies, you can kind of predict what's about to happen. That gets this low bass rumble, and you know something's about to happen. Unless, of course, it's a horror movie, in which case you just have the music just stop. And you know you're about to jump out of your seat. And they give you these things to prepare you for what's about to happen, but don't think that we're going to be sitting here in America and say, you know what? I think God's judgment's about to happen. That's not the way it works. And that's what Jesus points out. In Luke chapter 17, Jesus points out that when the judgment was coming, the people weren't preparing for it. They weren't waking up in the morning and saying, hey, you guys feel that? It feels like fire might be coming. We should all change. That's not how it works. Instead, what is stated in Luke 17, verse 28, it was the same as happened in the days of Lot. They were eating, they were drinking, they were buying, they were selling, they were planting, they were building. But on that day that Lot went out from Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. And this is the way God's judgment tends to work. It will be just the same on the day that the Son of Man is revealed. And Matthew, when talks about the destruction of Jerusalem and perhaps even the second coming of Christ as well, he compares it to Noah and he says they were doing the same thing. They were marrying, they were living, they weren't looking at it saying, wow, I feel like the whole world's about to come to an end. Just because God views the world as looking again like Sodom doesn't mean it's going to feel like that for everybody. Like they're going to feel like the end of the world is coming or the end of a country is coming. That's one of the lessons, is don't expect that feeling. Now, if you live in Sodom, you should understand that even though you're surrounded by incredibly wicked people, you don't know who you're surrounded by. You never know who you're going to run into. And so, God sends two angels. And I don't know if Lot looked at them and said, those guys look different. I think they're angels. I don't know if Lot understood it, but certainly the men of Sodom didn't understand it because they refer to him as bring out the men. They think they're just men. And in Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 2, it says that we're not supposed to neglect hospitality. For some have entertained angels without being aware of it, without knowing it. And I think he's talking about this particular moment. You want a sobering thought? What if God is sending angels to see if America is as bad as he's heard? And they're standing on street corners to see how we will treat them. You ever thought about beggars in that way? As a test to see how we will treat them? And so every time on the news that I hear about a homeless person getting beaten up, I cringe. Because it sounds kind of familiar. And it makes me think about the people that are around me. They are opportunities not for me to judge who they are, but opportunities for me to prove who I am. Third, if you live in Sodom, if you live in an incredibly wicked society, if you live in a society in which every single person around you is horrendously wicked, you can still be righteous. That's what we learn. Because we look at Lot, and in 2 Peter chapter 2, it repeats twice, he was righteous, Lot. He was a righteous man. But here's the key. If you want to be righteous in a wicked society, you can't be like everybody else. You have to be different. So when you see Lot, all of the men have gathered together, all of the men, young and old, from every quarter, have come together with a common purpose and a common idea, and Lot's the only one to oppose them. He looks and acts and treats things differently than they did. They want to hurt the men. He brought them in and protects the men. Now, I don't fully understand everything Lot did there. It didn't make much sense to me at all. Perhaps a little bit of wickedness has entered into his heart as well. But if you want to be righteous in a society, the further the society gets wicked, the more you need to be different. The more you need to stand out in the way that you dress, in the way that you talk, in the way that you live. But you can do it. And it, you know how preachers like to say, if there's one point you really need to get, this is it. Here it is. It's this next one. And that is, if we really want to make a difference, what you have to do is watch your heart. I am so mindful of what is stated about Lot in 2 Peter. Here he is, he's living in what is God's ultimate example of wickedness throughout time. And Lot manages to stay righteous, but what it says about him is in verse 8. Well, start in verse 7. He rescued righteous Lot, oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men. For by what he saw and heard, the righteous man, while living among them, felt his righteous soul tormented day after day by their lawless deeds. You want to be righteous? Watch your heart. See, the world does have a plan. It does have an agenda. And what it is to normalize what is profane. It is to make what is wicked become common with the hopes that you and I will get used to it. And no longer be tormented by it. You want to survive this world? You want to survive wickedness? You have to watch your heart and allow the pain. Embrace the anger and the pain at wickedness around you. It troubles me tremendously at the things I permit in my entertainment. The things that I no longer am bothered by when people say, did it have any foul language? And I cannot remember, that bothers me. Something's wrong. Currently, right now, Bonnie and I are just keenly aware of every time they decide to throw in a homosexual character in a homosexual relationship, but they're doing that so that someday we won't. Because you know what they do within the television shows? They have adultery all over the place. How often do you get upset at it? Has our hearts become callous? Have we started to accept the sin that is being bombarded upon us every day? That's not the way to survive. That's not the way to be victorious. We need to be like Lot and be tormented day by day, oppressed by the things the world shows us every day. If we're going to survive, if we're going to be righteous, well, then we probably ought to be ready to be accused. If you go back to Genesis chapter 19, this might sound a little familiar to you today. But Lot comes out to this mob of people intent on wickedness, and he tells them, don't do it. Don't do this wicked thing. And did you see how they responded to that in verse 9? They said, stand aside. Furthermore, they said, this one came in as an alien, and already he is acting like a judge. Ever hear that one? Stop judging me. Expect that response in the land that's like Sodom. In a land that is wicked, expect people to be upset if you disagree, to be furious if you stand in their way. In fact, what happens next is what you should expect is you should expect to be rejected and perhaps even rejected violently, because as that verse continues on, it says, now we will treat you worse than them. You see, in their mind, the entirety of the society, the entirety of the society disagrees with Lot. His morality is wrong. He's the one who has a problem. Get used to people thinking that way. But I'll tell you, it doesn't matter how many of them have gathered together and how many agree, we don't have the right to change morality. God decides that. And so they might call us judge, and they might get upset at us, and they might want to hurt us, and they might want to get us out of this country and make us stop thinking the way we think. But we shouldn't be surprised at that. That's what they did in Sodom, of all places. Well, if we live in Sodom, then we should understand that God rescues the righteous. And that's the encouraging message. So here we get this idea, you can be righteous anywhere. You can be righteous in the very seat of wickedness. You can be righteous in Sodom, and you can be saved anywhere. No matter how many people around us become wicked, God does not lose sight of those who are His. God didn't come down to Sodom and Gomorrah and say, wow, they are really, really bad, and just miss that Lot was there and destroy everybody. He comes in and He handpicks Lot. Did you see how handpicked that was? Lot, go. He doesn't go. He hesitates. They grab him by his hand and they pull him out. Why? God knows how to save the righteous. That's actually the message of 2 Peter chapter 2. It's twofold. It is one, God knows how to judge those who are wicked. But the other part of that is written to a people who are enduring in tremendous paganism and persecution. And the message is, God knows how to rescue the righteous from this world. And it is still true today. God will not overlook those who are righteous in a very wicked society. He still sees you, and He knows you by your name, and He desires to save you from whatever punishment He might have. Whether it be the eternal punishment for the world, or perhaps just the demise of a nation. But we have to be willing to leave. I don't know how far to take that. Spiritually, it makes a ton of sense. We have to be willing to be different, right? 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 11, we need to be strangers. We need to be foreigners to this land, yes. But you know, it's very literal here. Lot, I'm not giving you time to put your house up for sale. I'm not giving you time to pack. Go. And we need to have the mentality that says, I'm not so attached to this world that I won't leave it. I'm not so attached to this country that I won't leave it. Now, I don't know if God would give us any warning or if there would be any sign, but if there was something that said, America's about to fall, are you ready to go to Mexico? I remember, perhaps you remember, here's another political comment. During these last debates, there was the horror that President Trump might become president. And so many celebrities said, if he becomes president, I'm leaving the country. Have you noticed how many of them didn't leave? It's a lot easier to say it than to do it. But we've got to be prepared to do it. In Acts chapter 8, it was a persecution that came because of Christianity. Stephen has been killed. Saul is breathing threats. I'll get you all. The people just scattered, it says in verse 1. Now, they didn't leave their faith. In verse 4, they kept teaching. Wherever they went, they kept preaching. But they weren't afraid to leave. And you know what? They survived and the gospel thrived. We have to be prepared to leave. I don't know what that would look like. I don't know when that might happen. But if we want to be like Lot, we have to be ready at a moment's notice to say, this house isn't worth it. This country isn't worth it. I'm going on. I'm going elsewhere. Last thing I want to say, I'll say a few things about this, but a lesson that we get from this is that you need to beware the impact on your family. Maybe you are strong enough to withstand the immorality around you. Maybe you're so strong that you can watch any movie you want with any amount of wickedness and somehow it bounces off your heart and does not influence you. Maybe you're that strong. But is your family? Is your spouse? Are your children that strong? Poor Lot. He manages to stay righteous in Sodom and Gomorrah, but the message is, get out, I'm going to destroy everything. He goes to his sons-in-laws, and they think he's just joking. He grabs his wife and his daughters. He's going along, and his wife doesn't seem to want to leave. His wife holds on to Sodom. She turns back and dies. He loses his wife. And I admit that I'm making an interpretation here, but I believe that his daughters brought Sodom and Gomorrah with them. Because they don't know what to do. And the following what happens in Genesis chapter 19 is they have a morality that sounds very much like the gospel, like the Sodom and Gomorrah. And what they do is they say, we need to get our dad drunk so he can impregnate us. That sounds like more like Sodom and Gomorrah than anything. It only called Lot righteous. Not his wife. Not his daughters. So if we live in a wicked society, you need to watch out not just for your heart, but for theirs. Good news, I have all the answers. If you don't know, Bonnie and I don't have kids. Therefore, my record is perfect. I know exactly how to be a good parent. I do want you to consider a few points. Take them for what they're worth. Challenge them. Consider them. Ask parents. But I want you to consider three things in regards to how we ought to be bringing up our children in a wicked society. And the first one is we need to have purposeful teaching. It tells us in Proverbs 22 and verse 6, train up a child in the way he should go and he'll never depart from it. Ephesians 6 and verse 4, though, goes a little bit beyond that. It tells us that parents, specifically fathers, need to discipline children in the Lord. What I mean by this is that we need to do a whole lot more than teach our kids how to sit still. A whole lot more than just teach our kids how to be good students at school. We need to teach them the things that really matter. They are in a war and the school is fighting you. They're in a war for their souls. Teach their souls the things that matter. The spiritual things. Teach them about God. About our Father, our Creator. Our master. And with that, what we need to do is build strength and personal faith, because someday they have to stand on their own. And that will not work if all they know is what you believe, but they don't know why to believe it themselves. Today they're being taught love is love, and it's all good. And that sounds good unless somebody will teach them why it's bad. Why not all love is love. And while some love is hate, and some love hurts, and some love destroys, not just one person, not just a family, but entire societies. And we need to have them have a personal faith so that they agree and they understand why, so they can make their own stand. And in order to do that, may I strongly suggest that what we need to do is be Christians at home. Because your children, more than anybody else, will see through you. They know if you just come on Sundays. They know if this is in your heart and if Jesus is truly your master, or if this is just something we do once a week. And if this is just something you do once a week, it won't matter to them, because it doesn't matter that much to you. And so if you want your children to thrive and survive in a wicked civilization, I highly recommend you consider those things. But like I said, my track record is perfect. I don't actually know anything. Ask the parents. Especially ask the parents of children who've grown up and have stayed faithful. See what they did. I thank you so much for your time and your attention. You know, you don't know this, so I don't know why I asked, do you know? I couldn't decide what to preach. As of yesterday, I had 7 sermons set aside, and Bonnie said, they might not notice, just preach all of them. That was her idea. No, it's hard for me to come to an end for this. Because I, as much as I love the congregation in Northside, and I truly do, I do have a great place for you in my heart as well. And next Sunday when I'm preaching down at the Springs, Lord willing, I'll miss you. But I always think well of you.
And I hope that God will continue to bless you, and I look forward to your future. God said, if I can find 10 righteous people, I won't destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. I count more than 10. The world does not know how important we are. We stand between them and the wrath of God. Maintain your righteousness, and let us do the best we can to help the people around us avoid God's terrible judgment. If you're not a Christian, you need to become one. You need to respond to the gospel. We invite you to come and say, I believe Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. Repent of your sins. And having made that confession, to be baptized into him for the forgiveness of your sins. If you have fallen away, you don't know when that judgment's coming. Don't wait. Don't delay. Fix your life right now. We offer you an opportunity to do that. Won't you come as we stand and as we sing?